whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. It's hour number 3 of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan, and it's time now to catch up with one of our favorite Cowboys writers, John Machota of The Athletic, and we'll get to him here in just a minute. General at your service. If you see me, bear me, N.A. There's Brian Broaddus, former Cowboy scout, NFL executive, Super Bowl champion. You have Carter Freeman coordinating your video. Woolchuck's in the house. Lucius Alexander is master control over there. Eric Chiafalo was sick today, so send him some love on social media. Let him know he's missed, and let him know to get well soon as John Machota joins you now here on The Fan. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, yeah, thanks for joining us. What a day. As the Bears have asked for permission to chat with Mike McCarthy, is there any indication yet the Cowboys have granted that permission?
I have no knowledge of that, and that will be fascinating to see if they do, because that seems like that would be kind of telling, that if they were to grant that permission, that would seem like they are ready to move in another direction. I would think that the longer that no other teams talk to Mike McCarthy and the longer things go on, I would think that that means that Mike is probably coming back. So that was an interesting report to surface recently. But, you know, when Jerry was asked about it after the game, he kind of compared it to the Ezekiel Elliott situation, where he's like, well, Ezekiel Elliott wanted out, and so I allowed him to, you know, go see what other opportunities are out there, and that he wants people around that want to be here. So almost making it sound like that if Mike was to talk to another team, then maybe he doesn't want to be here, and so he would allow that to happen. Well, we'll see if he allows that.
Yeah, yeah, that's fascinating. Do you think there's a chance that as this reported meeting between Mike and Jerry gets underway either this afternoon or evening, that we could have a deal tonight, you think, or early tomorrow morning?
I mean, it's possible. I've just felt like the way the Cowboys operate, it's probably something that happens, you know, let's be honest. It wouldn't surprise me if it was something that happened at the end of the week or even going into these wild card games, just because that's how Cowboys do business. I mean, that's how it was with Jason Garrett. You know, I think Jerry will allow Mike to do all of his exit interviews with all his players. Those usually take a couple days, and then he'll meet with Mike at the end of all of those. And so, yeah, maybe it comes together quickly, but I don't know. It's like covering the Cowboys, there's just so few things that come together quickly. I mean, you obviously see it with the contract extensions for the top players that you know that they want to bring back, and they constantly go until like the 11th hour until they finally get done. And so because of that, it's kind of like, I'll believe it when I see it. I just think it's going to be kind of dragged out a little bit.
So you think if tomorrow there's no permission given to Mike McCarthy to chat with the Bears, but there's no announcement of a new deal, we'll just be hanging in that ambiguity territory that Jerry's so comfortable with?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Jerry's comfortable in there, but so few other people are comfortable in that situation. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, Jerry talked yesterday outside the locker room, and I think in the total it was probably about 40 minutes. And I will say this, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, want to say that, yeah, he's lost his fastball and things like that. Sitting there around that entire 40 minutes, like for him to stand there, not try and walk away, answer every question you answer or you ask of him, and he gives you enough to where you're like, yeah, I could kind of see him. It sounds like Mike's coming back. And then the next minute you're like, yeah, I don't know if he's saying that. It sounds like that Mike's gone and they're going another direction. And he can do that for 40 minutes, never once acting like, guys, I got to go. I got to go. Like, it's like sport to him. He enjoys that. Like, it's fun for him. And it's pretty entertaining, because even after he leaves, you know, there's a lot of people that have covered the team even longer than me. And we're sitting there talking like, yeah, which way do you think he's leaning on this? Like, it's hard to tell. Like, and I think he really enjoys that. He likes the fact that we're talking about these things.
It's crazy. The great John Machota joining us here of The Athletic inside the G-Bag Nation. When it comes to Zim, I know also he was kind of noncommittal on whether he wanted to come back. Do you think there's a part of this where they want to see what Zimmer's going to do before they fully commit to McCarthy? Like, are they somewhat tied together?
I don't think that they are. I think that they'll decide McCarthy first before Zimmer. And you know, and just it's tough to know on Zimmer if he wants to really come back. You know, I mean, you know, in hearing like Micah after the game and then, you know, today in the locker room, it just kind of makes you feel like that the players even think that maybe he wants to ride off into the sunset. I think that's the wording that might be used. So I think that one, there's a lot more uncertainty there. I think that that's a secondary thing. I don't think that that's connected with Mike McCarthy. I think that they'll want to get that situation figured out, whatever they're going to do at head coach before they move on to the defensive coordinator.
Do you feel like, John, that, you know, you talk about the Zimmer situation. Do you feel like that we might be in now for our third defensive coordinator here, you know, with the situation, with Dan leaving, of course, and then Mike leaving, and now, I mean, is this going to be, or do you feel like that there's a candidate that they might want to name the defensive coordinator on this current staff?
I really don't think so. I think if it's anybody on the current staff, I think it would be Mike Zimmer just retaining that spot for to keep the continuity and build off of what they how they started to improve and kind of, you know, work his system more as the season went on. I think that would make a lot of sense, but I think if it's not Mike Zimmer, I think it's somebody that's not in the building. And yeah, to your point, that would be the third different defensive coordinator, and that's usually not a great thing. You want some continuity there from year to year. Obviously that worked with Dan Quinn, but I will say this, you know, just covering the team and just being around the team, there is a part of it where you're just kind of like, you know, something needs to change. I don't know how you can keep doing the exact same thing and expect to have different results, you know, in January. So, you know, yeah, you want continuity, but at the same time, sometimes you got to make a change to shake things up. And when you do that, you know that there's a chance that when you make that change, that things could be worse than they are right now, but that's the risk that you take.
Yeah, John Machota here with you on The Fan. Now, before we continue with those other conversations about the offseason and Mike and maybe even the draft and all that, I saw on your Twitter page Tyreek Hill's next team odds with the Cowboys favored at 3-1. Is there something here or is this just fun?
I think it's probably fun. And the only reason I say that is because I get these emails quite often. And I'm not saying every player the Cowboys are high on the list, but the Cowboys are usually in the mix. I tweeted that out because I was surprised that the Cowboys were actually the number one team. I think that Tyreek Hill, that was a possibility, would love to play for the Dallas Cowboys, especially play opposite of CeeDee Lamb. But my thing is that I think, well, one, they'd have to figure out the head coach first and what they're going to do there. But the other thing is the financial side of it. Like, are the Cowboys really willing to find a way to make something like that work? From just what I see from their roster building up to this point, that seems highly unlikely. But it is the Cowboys, and if a player really wants to play for them and is willing to work some things out, like, I guess it's a possibility. And let's be honest, like, can anybody say definitively right now who their number two wide receiver is next year? I mean, I don't think that they know that for certain. I mean, I think it's a spot that you might have to look at pretty early in the draft because, you know, that's a spot that they just really haven't had. So it would make a lot of sense. And if this was the San Francisco 49ers or the Philadelphia Eagles with how aggressive they are, I would say, oh yeah, no, it's a real possibility. But you just look at the way the Cowboys have roster built, like, there's just not many guys they pay significantly that aren't guys that they drafted.
Well, their first round pick, Tyler Guyton, I wonder, what do you think their feelings are for him heading into next year? I mean, you were hoping he'd be in line with the plug and play offensive lineman. He'd be your starting left tackle. But then even yesterday, they're pulling him out for Awesome Richards.
Yeah, I don't think that their confidence is wavered in what he can be. You know, obviously they were hoping for a better rookie year from him, but I don't think that means that they would be writing him off. That would be too soon. And I think part of it comes from just with the Cowboys, you know, having pretty quick success with Tyron and Zach and Travis, and then obviously with Tyler Smith. I think that you give him time. I think he'll be fine just because of the fact that he's also moving positions this year from, you know, right tackle to left tackle. I mean, it didn't go as smooth, but I think the biggest thing that the Cowboys would say is that they need him to be available more. You know, there was a lot of injuries and things like that that not only kept him out of games, but kept him out of practices and things like that. And so, but I don't think that they're wavering about him being their left tackle of the future.
John, what about the key free agents here with Martin and Tank and Lewis and Osa? Do we just say goodbye to all of them with their cap approach, or do you think there's a chance that some of them come back?
Yeah, I know. I mean, especially after last year when, you know, they basically lost everybody, that, you know, the Dorrances and Dante Fowlers and Biadasz, like any of the guys that were getting respectable offers, like, pretty much were out. And so that would make you think that if that happens again, that I don't see how they're going to be able to bring back Osa. I just think that he'll get the most money out of that group. But it would be interesting to see, like, a big thing for me would be, like, and I don't even expect this to happen, but it would be pretty wild if they got a contract extension done with Micah Parsons before free agency started, because that would give them some more wiggle room and things like that. And Micah has said all the right things about how he's willing to do that, about how he doesn't need to be a highest paid defensive player, that he's willing to work with them so they could potentially bring some of those guys back. So if they don't get something done with Micah before free agency, I don't see it being where they're bringing back many of those guys. So I think it would be one of those things where, yeah, okay, what guys come on somewhat team friendly, like they're good deals for the Cowboys, you know, and maybe that's Jordan Lewis. You know, I think this is Jordan Lewis's last chance to, on a good contract in his career just because of his age. Mm-hmm. And so maybe another team offers him something better, but I think that's a player they'd really like to have back. They'd really like to have all those guys back. I just think that it's going to be one of those things where, like, it's going to have to be on the at the Cowboys' number.
What's the best-case scenario to you with the 12th pick? I mean, I feel like there's so many needs everywhere that just get a really good player.
I agree, and that's when they've been the best is when, honestly, it's the position that you're thinking even 5 minutes before the draft starts. They've been at their best when they just take whatever's the best guy available, whether it's Agreed. Zach Martin, yeah. CeeDee Lamb, who's the more recent? Well, obviously Mike would be a more recent one. I mean, everybody thought they would go corner in that draft, and man, did that end up great for them. So that would be my plan. Hey, if there's a great edge rusher, and that might not be your biggest need, go get the guy. If that's the guy that you're just like, I can't believe this guy's here, we can pair him with Micah, I'm totally on board with that. But if all of that's wiped out, for me, I go Ashton Jeanty, because that gives me the best chance to put a spark into this offense, because I don't think they're going to go get Tyreek Hill. I don't think that they're going to go spend on a big-time number two receiver. And so I think that Ashton Jeanty would be the guy that, almost like 2016 with Zeke, that could just really give you a spark that obviously helps the offense and changes the offense a little bit, but also, you know, helps Dak, and then it helps the defense too. So that's me. I know not everybody loves him, but I see some of the Zeke 2016 in that type of pick.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Jeanty's a hell of a player. If McCarthy is not brought back, do you have a short list of any names that you think would be realistic? I've thrown out today, John, Kellen Moore, just because of the affinity that they have for him. They know him, and maybe that would make Dak happy.
Yeah, I don't think you can completely rule that one out. The thing that's interesting about a Kellen Moore, and then obviously people talk about, you know, Ben Johnson quite a bit, is, well, how deep do those teams go in the playoffs? Like, are they going, like, there's a good chance it's either the Eagles or Lions in the Super Bowl. So you're waiting all the way to the Super Bowl. That would be kind of wild, but I have my doubts that they go the coordinator route. I just feel like at Jerry's age, he's going to go with somebody that's a previous head coach. And so I feel like if a lot of us are running the team, we would probably lean in towards the offensive coordinator from another team, like, you know, like a Ben Johnson or somebody. I just don't get the sense that Jerry's going to want to do that. If Jerry goes in another direction, I just think it's going to be someone that, like, I think a John Gruden has a better chance than it being one of these young offensive coordinators.
Hey, John, which one of these things happened that gets Jerry off his ass? The Vrabel interview or McCarthy getting the asking permission from the Bears?
Probably McCarthy with the Bears. I just think that would put everything into motion. That, and I say that because Jerry could take that in a way as like almost like it could bother him. Like, how, I can't believe Mike would want to do that. Like,
sure.
You know, you got a chance to continue being a Cowboy. Everybody should want to be a Cowboy. And it's not difficult to see how Jerry would think of things that way. And so that could honestly like force Jerry's hand where maybe like right now, because I certainly think he's still waffling. Like, he doesn't know 100% for certain which way he's going. He's still like kind of going to drag it out a couple more days. But that could be one of those things where Mike comes to him and is like, no, I want to interview with them. Where Jerry's like, okay, well, then I'm going another direction. You know, I needed it to be definitive that you wanted to be here.
Yeah, I think that thing's really interesting. And, you know, yesterday Mike made such a big impression that this is where I want to be. I'm a winner. Do you think that could change if the Cowboys are chatting with him tonight and won't give him permission to interview with the Bears? Would Mike McCarthy's approach to this or mindset about the relationship with Jerry change?
It certainly could. You know, I mean, he has said how, you know, he hasn't had conversations with Jerry about the contract per se, but I just feel like he's probably got a way better read on it than he's probably even letting us know. And so I think that factors in too, you know, to see him, you know, after the game, waiting at that locker room doors to like, you know, hug all the coaches and stuff coming in. You know, like, there was just something about it. And then just last week how he was talking about, like, it just seems like he knows that there's a good chance that that you know, Sunday's game could have been his last as the Cowboys head coach. And so I think he has a feel probably where Jerry's leaning. But I don't know for certain. And it's kind of crazy with the Cowboys and just how much local and the national media coverage they get, that there hasn't been a name that's leaked out of just like, hey, Jerry really likes this guy. He probably wants to keep Mike, but he really likes this coach. Like, there's been none of that. And because of that, that's why I've always kept that window cracked to, like, don't be surprised if Mike McCarthy comes back, because there isn't that other name out there like we've had for so many years with Sean Payton, where you're like, oh, well, Jerry's just going to go get that guy. That guy does not exist right now.
What'd you think of him saying he didn't know about the Cooper Rush incentives?
So I believe him to a certain extent, because he also did say in that he didn't know about it until he read it in an article that was written after, because Cooper Rush talked in the locker room this week about that. So I do believe that to a certain extent, like, that I do believe he knew going into that game, but I don't know that he knew, let's say, a week ago, which I guess some people could be critical of that, because your title is general manager of the team. Those would be things that you think that the general manager would know. But I don't think that I understand it's a storyline that, especially when, you know, a lot of people are critical of Jerry. I don't think that it was one of these things where Jerry's like, oh, I'm just going to be cheap here. I don't want to pay this guy. So, Mike, you're starting Trey Lance on Sunday. I don't think that was the case at all.
John, terrific work once again. Enjoy the off season best you can, and we can't wait to see you next time.
Absolutely, boys. Have a good day.
There he goes, John Machota. Must follow there on Cowboys Twitter. Catch up, read his stuff, listen to him on the Athletics platforms. Okay, well, Chuck, it's time for the top 10, buddy. Where are you taking us?
Well, it is the day where we have coaches being fired, and we've got the 10 worst NFL head coaching firings in recent memory. That's next.
Yeah, buddy, welcome back. Thanks to John Machota for joining us. A lengthy Cowboys conversation is in the books. You can go back and watch us with the Odyssey app, instant rewind functionality. Segment of the Nation brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today at carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured in a car, truck wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Jump online at frankelfirm.com. Now, here he is, Zach with an H. You're ready.
All right, what are some of the worst NFL head coaching firings of all time? As I'm sure there's one locally that'll come to mind that we wish never happened, and it might be on this list. 877-881-1053 is for seeing coaches get the pink slip throughout the National Football League today. We also had some happen yesterday. Gerard Mayo getting fired. Doug Peterson got fired today. We've had some happen in season as well, but still no new news on Mike McCarthy yet. Bears want to interview him. We'll see if he's allowed. And according to Jane, Jerry and Mike will be meeting today, this afternoon. Maybe it's already happened. Maybe it's happening as we speak. But worst head coach firings in National Football League history. And this list is in no particular order, so I'll just start on the bottom, work our way back to the top. This one, I think, personally, you might have been part of here, Brian. Tom Coughlin in Jacksonville. He was the head coach of the Jags from their inception in 95 until he was fired in 02. During his time, they had two trips to the AFC Championship game. Tom Coughlin then joined the Giants, and we know what happened there is he went on to win a pair of Super Bowls, and really Jacksonville has never been as consistently good since Tom Coughlin was fired. They had some good years with Jack Del Rio. They went back to a championship game a couple of seasons ago, but the consistency they had under Tom Coughlin, they've really still been searching for.
No, I mean, he got rid of me before I got rid of him. So, yeah.
Believe that guy?
No, but Tom Coughlin changed a lot from the time when he got let go at Jacksonville and then took the Giants job. They knew him. He was a receivers coach with Bill Parcells, so he knew how the Giants operated. But he became a different head coach when it came to maybe a more compassionate guy in the locker room. In Jacksonville, he was very much iron-fisted the way he handled things.
Real hard ass.
Yeah, and it really, a lot, you know, once you start to lose, you can't be that guy anymore. And they were struggling a little bit there. And Wayne Weaver, the owner at the time, probably had enough of him and, you know, in Tom's ways, but the time he sat out and then got that Giants job, he was a completely different coach.
And he was still, I mean, maybe these are more anecdotally than every day, but there were still plenty of stories coming out of him being a major pain in the ass to work for.
He's one of the toughest human beings I've ever had to work with. I mean, I've worked with Parcells, Gary Patterson.
Wasn't he like 5 minutes early is on time?
Oh, no. Kind of guy? We weren't allowed to wear sunglasses on the field, you know, and like we had to stand 10 feet apart because we couldn't talk to each other. You know, there were all these, he had a book of rules that you had to like go through, you know, and it was
micromanaging.
Way they ran the draft, he just roughshod the draft over the scouts. And, you know, there was a lot of things that he had nobody, no checks and balances. When he got to the Giants, they had some checks and balances over there. He wasn't going
to
do the things.
He had to loosen up. Maybe that was the perfect blend, maybe.
Perfect spot for him in New York.
Jim Caldwell in Indianapolis. He was the head coach of the Colts from 2009 until 2011. Led them to a Super Bowl when they lost to the Saints. He was fired after a disappointing 2-14 record, but they didn't have Peyton Manning. Later became the head coach of the Lions, where he led the team to the playoffs, lost to the Cowboys in controversial fashion, then led the Lions to two more winning seasons before getting fired in 2017. They replaced him with Matt Patricia. And I guess it's worked out now because they've got Dan Campbell. But I think for a while, their Lions fans were like, why in the world did we fire Jim Caldwell after he took us to multiple winning seasons? And they looked back on that and said that was a bad decision. Still hasn't gotten another head coaching job.
No, he has not.
Tony Dungy with the Bucks. And that was kind of a swap with Gruden. Obviously, he goes on to the Colts. I mean, this one kind of worked out for both. But I guess in hindsight, if Dungy had have stayed in Tampa Bay, would he have been able to keep the Bucs and had more than just one Super Bowl, John, which is what ended up happening with John?
John won with his team. John won. Tony Dungy was a tremendous evaluator. Hmm. You know, he'd been with the Vikings, played the Steelers. I mean, he'd been around great coaches. He is for real. When he starts to talk about faith and, you know, and all the things that, you know, that people kind of always like, oh, bless this, thank that, you know. No, Tony is real. And he's seen it done the right way. And so it's not surprising that everywhere he's ever been, they've won.
Yeah.
He's a very, very good evaluator of football talent.
He's done. How about Bill Belichick in Cleveland? Was there from 91 to 95. During his time, he led the Browns to a playoff appearance in 94. Team made it to the divisional round, lost to the Steelers. Fired after 95 when the team was relocated to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And then he returned to coaching with the Patriots. We know what happened there. But, man, you go back and you look at that Cleveland 95 team. Holy moly, the coaching staff is amazing. Nick Saban's there. It's a long list of guys that went on to have a tremendous future. But
Kurt Ferentz was on that staff. He's been the coach at Iowa for a long time. He was an offensive line coach there. Yeah, they've had some quality guys. Jim Schwartz, I think, was on that. They've got a lot of guys.
You've got Andy Reid in Philadelphia. Now, Andy gets fired after a miserable 2012 season. Ends up going to Kansas City in 2013, and then finally was able to get over the hump, which is why they fired him in Philly for not being able to win Super Bowls. But there was a little bit of a spell there until Doug Peterson, to where, you know, you had the Chip Kelly years in Philly, and they're probably thinking, my God, why did we get rid of Andy Reid?
Well, that's Howie Roseman got put on ice at that time, the 2 years that Chip Kelly was there. They didn't fire Howie, but he got put aside because Chip had his way of doing things, the way he wanted to do personnel. So they didn't fire Howie, but they put him over on the side. And then when Chip when Chip left, Howie proceeded to get rid of everything that Chip Kelly had ever done in that organization and then started running it the way he wanted it run.
How about Marv Levy in Kansas City? 19, he was there from 79 to 81. They went 500. And then they end up firing him. He goes on, had a USFL stint.
Chicago Blitz, I believe.
Overhauled the Bills. And we know what happened there. I mean, they didn't win the Super Bowl, but you go to four straight Super Bowls. I'm sure Kansas City was thinking, what the heck?
Yeah, Bill Polian was the architect of those Buffalo teams, and he really takes a different approach. You know, he went for some small school guys. I mean, and they got very fortunate that Jim Kelly had success in the USFL, and they were able to get him. And he, Jim Kelly, being a Miami guy, or I know he University of Miami, but man, I think he's Pennsylvania guy too. But built great for that conditions to play in Buffalo the way he threw the ball.
Vrabel's on here with the Titans just firing him. Apparently, Vrabel was very against them trading away A.J. Brown when they did, and that caused a disconnect between him and management. Well, Vrabel was right. I mean, clearly they've been searching for a wide receiver since.
The general manager, John Robinson, I think was his name. Yeah, he and Robinson went after it, and then they got rid of both of them, and then Rand Carthon is now the GM there.
Jim Harbaugh with the Niners. And he has said that I didn't leave the Niners. I felt the Niners hierarchy left me.
Yeah.
They fired him after 2014. He goes to Michigan, has success there, wins a national championship. Niners struggled after firing Harbaugh until 2019 when they got Lynch and Shanahan. Speaking of Shanahan, how about Mike? Mike Shanahan.
Raiders, fired 89. With the Raiders. 89.
Yep. 7-9 record. Yeah. He was replaced by Art Shell, then goes to Denver in the division, has tremendous success. Yeah. And then finally, we get to Jimmy Johnson. And I know somebody texted in like, Jimmy quit. Jimmy wasn't fired. It might have been a mutual parting of the ways. Either way, it goes down as a firing, one of the strangest firings in NFL history. And to this day, you look back on it. I know I do. All Cowboy fans do. How many could the Cowboys have won if Jimmy and Jerry just had been able to keep that relationship intact? Instead, it's never been the same. Ever since Jimmy and Jerry parted ways.
Yeah, it really seemed like there was a perfect storm of dominance, for that half decade span that, those teams were able to dominate in. And, it seemed invincible at the time as he left, and obviously Barry Switzer proved that. But we don't have any evidence that he would have continued to be successful without the extra picks that Herschel Walker bought and without his added layer of knowledge from working in college so intimately, up until his time that he took over with all those extra picks for the Cowboys. What do you think, Brian? You think Jimmy could have rebuilt that through the mid to late 90s and kept the dynasty going?
Yeah, he had a really good handle on the college draft. He was a very shrewd evaluator. His coaches, he was starting to lose coaches like, some of the Shanahans.
Shanahans left.
Yeah, exactly. It was going to be having to replace those coaches. And he had some guys in place. He had Zimmer in place, Campbell in place. He had some guys that he could have fallen back on. He lost Butch Davis. There was a lot of guys that were kind of going out to. But Jimmy was one of those guys. I mean, Jimmy, everywhere he's been, it's always been like 6-7
It's been a small
years.
Amount of time. He kind of goes and leaves.
It's like, he kind of goes in there, fixes things, and then he moves on. He's Oklahoma State, Cowboys, Miami. Yeah, he just always kind of moved along, after a quit, never stayed very long. But, I think he could have. I think he could have absolutely kept things going there.
All righty. Thank you, Woolchuck. Another top 10 at 420 is in the books. The Cowboys.com draft show with Broadus and Woolchuck and everybody starts tomorrow. Which college star do we most want to see in a Cowboys uniform next season? That's coming up next year on the fan. Thank you very much, Lucius. We're hawking Cowboys Twitter right now, just waiting for anything to drop. Right before the show, Jane Slater told us Mike and Jerry are meeting. We've heard so far no indication that Jerry Jones is going to give the Bears permission to chat with Mike McCarthy. They have requested permission so far this afternoon. It'll be real awkward if, they meet and Jerry doesn't want to do a new deal, but at the same time doesn't want to give him permission to chat with the Bears. That would be, very interesting, and we'll look forward to tracking that story with you. But at the same time, we're now getting ready for the NFL draft, and the Cowboys.com folks, they have their draft show, their coverage led by Brian Broadus starting tomorrow. And of course, throughout the G-Bag Nation here over the next 4 months, we'll be, covering this story quite extensively. Question for you on the Franklin injury attorney text line. Leave your name and city you're texting from. Which college star do you most want to see in a Cowboys uniform next season? And I tell you, it's really exciting. Like, just bring up Dane Brugler's player rankings, like he updates his top 50 or top 100 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I really only care about like prospects about 7 through 12 or 7 through 15. I mean, you have the linebacker at Georgia, Jalen Walker.
Yep.
You have the edge at Georgia, Michael Williams. You have Mason Graham, the big defensive tackle at Michigan. Luther Burden III, the wide receiver at Missouri. The offensive tackle at LSU, Will Campbell, is there. Then you're back with another edge player, James Pierce from Tennessee, 6'4", 245. Loveland, the tight end at Michigan. I don't think they'd go back to the tight end.
No,
well,
I don't think they would either.
I hope not.
And then, you know, the defensive tackle at Oregon, Derek Harmon. So, I mean, just the players at positions. Obviously, this Cowboys team needs a lot, but those are real premium positions to be looking at. And the opportunity to add one that could massively impact next year. Like, you look at the step back that the Cowboys took this year, I think a lot of that is due to the – you know, it's a pretty big swing and miss on Mozzie Smith, and we'll see with Tyler Guyton. But you've got nothing as far as making a winning impact from two first-rounders in a row. This one is crucial if you have any hopes of getting back into contention that you have a guy next year that can be on the all-rookie team at the very least.
Yeah, especially in the top half of the first round. You've got to make sure you get a guy now. You don't have the excuse of, okay, well, we're picking in the late 20s. And I understand this year's draft, from what I've seen, is nowhere near the talent when it comes to just like surefire, you feel gems at the top. You're kind of having to navigate a little bit of minefields here, mm-hmm. where it's like, man, this guy's got a wart, this guy I like, but there's this, there's that. There's not anybody that, like a blue chipper. The guys at the top, like Abdul Carter out of Penn State, I'd put in that category for me. But otherwise, I think you're going to be played out of like the Travis Hunters of the world. So Genty is going to be the sexy guy that gets mocked there at 12.
He'll be the cleanest player. I think he'll be the cleanest one when it comes to the character, injury history. Now we'll see about it. How much do we care about the number of carries?
Yeah.
That's something. If you know
374.
If you know you're taking a running back, you're probably going to have him for that one cycle. We'll see what happens. But those 4 or 5 years that he plays for you, I think you're going to get a player that's very similar to what Bijan Robinson is, what we started to see from him lately with the Atlanta Falcons and that type. Maybe even better. I think he's a better player than Bijan Robinson myself. And I absolutely loved Bijan Robinson.
That's high praise, absolutely.
Yeah, there's going to be, because there's going to be a couple of players in this first round that are going to have really, really high talent. Simmons, the offensive tackle from Ohio State, could be the best tackle in the draft. He's got a knee injury. Mm-hmm. Ravel, the corner from East Carolina, could have been the best corner in the draft. He has a knee injury. So, you know, there's going to be a couple. Where are these teams going to put these players? I think there's, Gavin, there's a lot of questions about these offensive tackles. This group is not as cut and dry as we've seen in the past. You know, if you're saying, oh, we need an offensive tackle. Okay, yeah, best one likely is Simmons. He's hurt. Campbell, some inconsistency there. People say maybe he needs to play guard. He's a kid from LSU, you know. Banks, the offensive tackle from Texas. Great matchup this week, by the way. Ohio State's got some rushers that are, you know, with Sawyer and those guys that are going to be able to compete against Banks. So, you know, Banks and those guys are going to have their hand, Campbell, and those guys are going to have their hands, you know, full with and it'll be really, really good matchups for them.
So you're saying it's just not a clear picture at 12 for one reason or another, inconsistent player injury, that Genty will by far be that blinking light, like, hey, here's your guy that's actually for sure going to be a good player. I would come back and say, wouldn't taking a risk on a higher premium position be the better team building move, considering you have Rico Dowdle? Like, how much more production is Genty going to give you than 4.7 yards per attempt with this offensive line? I just, you know, I kind of feel like we have decent running game pretty banked right now, and I want to address other needs on the team. Is there too big of a fall off on the score?
Well, then you're standing at the table, you got the dice in your hands, and you're rolling that, and you're hoping, because to me, there's some players, like, I'm going to give you an example. McMillan, and help me here too, Zach, if you would.
McMillan's outstanding.
From Arizona.
Yeah.
Burden, wide receiver, Missouri. He could definitely help you.
Egbuka.
But Egbuka, Ohio State, could definitely help you right there. So those are the wide receivers. We talked about Banks at Texas. Would you play him at guard? Would you play him at right guard? You know, that's a possibility as well. We take Genty out of the mix. I'm a little bit of that. I'm not sure so much about Mykel Williams from Georgia. I beautiful looking player, 6'5", 265. Does he play like a guy that's going to be the 12th overall pick? I don't know, Zach.
I think he's a good run defender. Yeah. To me, I don't always see what you need to for a top 12 pick when it comes to pass rushing upside.
Okay.
But then you've got the polar opposite with like Pierce from Tennessee.
Yeah. Who really rushes the passer, but does nothing against the run.
He can get completely blown off the football.
Yeah. And I think Walker is an edge.
I like
Jalen Walker. As a linebacker.
I'd be in on Walker at 12 from Georgia. Like that would be a premium guy. That and hey, you think I like him just as an edge player?
You're right about him.
Some
off ball stuff. That
I'm
you
going
see
the Micah Parsons route with him.
Yeah, absolutely, and he even wears number 11.
Yeah,
I mean he plays. He's that kind of guy. I'd love to have an opportunity to draft Graham, the defensive tackle from Michigan, at 12. I think so. There's probably three or four guys there, and maybe those guys are going to go a little bit higher because of the uncertainty of the other people are trying their best in that top 10 not to take huge risks.
Well, let me ask you this about Jenty, because you're right, Zach. He is the hot pick in the mock drafts. I mean, I had to go searching for a mock that didn't have Ashton Jenty being the Cowboys pick at 12, you know, at the conclusion of yesterday's game, a lot of mock drafts populated. But do you feel like the Cowboys are a star running back away from getting back into contention? Like, what kind of an impact does that have on your team? Because if not, then I think you should, you know, invest in other pieces of the infrastructure of this roster.
Jenty will help you in your red zone offense. I mean, Rico, I think the Cowboys were second worst in rushing touchdowns this year. I think the only team that was worse was Cleveland, which is somewhat surprising. But the Cowboys, I think, had, what, six, like, total rushing touchdowns? They weren't able to get into the end zone. Like, Rico did not score touchdowns this year. That was something that Zeke was amazing at during those first few years.
Even when he went bad, he was still good at getting in the end zone. Yeah.
And Jenty's one of these guys, even against Oregon and Penn State. I know you want to say, okay, well, the level of competition. Look at the missed tackles forced. He's not a back that has to have an elite offensive line to be productive. So I'm with you, especially in this class. If you look at which position group stretches the most, it might very well be running back. But if I want to get a plug-and-play difference maker at 12 and I don't want to stress about it, Jenty is probably the safest bet you can get. And yes, I think this team specifically, based on having the quarterback in Dak Prescott, needs an established running game to help him.
Yeah,
especially with the health questions moving forward.
If the offensive line is going to struggle in certain times, this guy makes people miss. Now, we'll say, okay, well, can he make NFL guys miss? Yeah, I've seen Bijan Robinson, similar type of running style, make people in the NFL miss. So to me, I look at it as that clean player that could come in and help you right now. I think he can be a difference maker. These other ones that I'm looking at, I think there's some really good players. I don't know how they come in and immediately change your game. That's what I worry about right now.
Yeah, and with the offensive line, I wouldn't mind a tackle who might have to play guard for a while, because I don't know what the situation is with Terrence Steele and Tyler Guyton. You know, if one of those guys has a tremendous amount of talent and the biggest concern is he might have to play guard, I think that's the guy that I want. I don't see you guys talking about any centers, though, right?
Haven't seen his first-round center
might
yet.
Might be second-round work.
Yeah, not the first round. And another name that I want to throw out there is Jahdae Barron out of Texas. I mean,
I have him as a first-round grade. Yeah, I have a first-round grade on him. I actually like him better, the Texas corner, better than Will Johnson, the Michigan corner. Yeah.
All righty. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 through the Fan. An absolutely massive day of NFL news, though, as teams start to sort out their coaching situations. And the Cowboys is always a big focus of that. So if anything happens there, we will break in with the latest update. But in addition to the finest up next, well, Chuck, where are you taking it?
Could this end up being a Dallas Cowboy? Micah Parsons already on the recruiting trail. We'll get to that, plus your latest coaching news.